All right, welcome back. Thanks for joining us for a Friday edition of Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. And, of course, this is Backpatting Day. Pat yourself on the back. It's Friday. You're going to make it. 5 o'clock, you'll be off to the weekend. I feel like President Trump. I'm doing this Trump thing with my hands. I feel like I'm directing aircraft at the airport. All right, this is Tony Beam, Director of Church and Community Engagement for the Tim Brazier Campus of North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference. My co-host is Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid.
Okay, well, we actually had a debate last night. It was either a debate or a rerun of Grumpier Old Men. I couldn't remember which one I was watching. But, no, actually, it was pretty good. There was substance. There was back and forth. There were some points scored by Biden. There were some points scored by Trump. I think overall, it doesn't do anything to very much change the outcome of the election.
If this had been the first debate, maybe, but not the second.
Well, yeah, I just don't. I mean, you know, Biden demonstrated that he absolutely has no clue about how the economy works by talking about stimulus package plans for small businesses when the question was about whether he was in favor of a minimum wage. You know, being $15 an hour. And he acted like the $15 an hour was going to help small businesses. And Trump's standing over there going, what, you're going to help them by forcing them to pay $15 an hour at a time when they've been affected by the coronavirus shutdown? I mean, that was an interesting moment.
Yeah, the other big thing was the fracking and talking about the oil industry and Joe Biden just kind of fumbling all over the place with that and then just kind of coming out and saying, well, we're going to transition away from we are going to transition away from the oil industry.
Yeah, that got the Twitter universe lit up pretty good.
Yeah, the Twitter universe kind of, the people were like, Colorado heard that, Pennsylvania heard that, you know, and of course he said, I've never said I'm going to ban fracking. I've never said, show me the tape. And of course, within 2 minutes, Trump's campaign had the tape, and it was blasted all over Twitter. You know?
Yeah, we'll play that for you today. I mean, I don't know why we should have to, because he said it. I mean, he said he was going to, during the campaign, when he was trying to get the nomination, and I think maybe one time after he was the candidate that had already gotten the nomination, he definitively said he was going to ban fracking. So now he's backed off of that because he can't win Pennsylvania and talk about banning fracking. And the whole oil industry transition is considered by many to be the biggest goof politically of the night for Biden, because it did. I mean, when you start talking about, and now Biden tried to come back and say, well, he was talking about oil company subsidies. Mm-hmm. No, it was that you can go look at it. The question was not about subsidizing anything. It was about shifting the whole economy off of the production of oil, which would be, and Biden says nobody's going to lose their jobs because everybody's going to get jobs in a new industry. You're talking about retraining. You're talking about people that have spent their life in the fossil fuel industry suddenly being able to have jobs in an industry that doesn't yet exist. That's the thing. This whole idea of the, you know, all you have to do is look at California. If you want to see what happens when you base your energy grid a lot on things like solar, that's not dependable. Solar can be affected by too many things, and it's okay to use solar maybe as a supplement, maybe as so that your fossil fuel consumption can be a little bit lower, but you can't begin to build your power grid percentage-wise around solar and keep the lights on, because it's not dependable. You can't store solar energy effectively. If you really want to move to something that's going to be much more, get us away from fossil fuel, then move to nuclear, move to natural gas. I mean, you know, go to things that are cleaner, easier to manage. And of course, everybody freaks out when you say nuclear because of, you know, Three Mile Island and the nuclear meltdown in Russia. But here's the thing, that nuclear power is safe. I mean, if you look at it, there've been a lot more oil fires and oil spills than there have been nuclear problems and nuclear disasters. Now, granted, when you have a nuclear problem. That's when people's lives can be taken and the environment can be altered for years. But the same is true for any kind of energy source. I mean, there's upsides and downsides. And the upsides to nuclear energy is it does move us away from fossil fuels. But anyway, you had that. And then, of course, you had the big moment where Joe Biden says he brought Hitler to the table when we were talking about Kim Jong-un and talking about that. That's like saying we had a good relationship with Hitler before World War II, before 1941. The truth is, I didn't even know this. I went back to look this up because I'm going, what kind of relationship did we have with Hitler before? You know, well, the Weimar Republic that preceded the Third Reich, that the United States tried to help the Weimar Republic because it was after World War I and Germany was in a terrible economic depression, chaos pretty much, and that's the environment that created Hitler. Mm-hmm. But you look at the trade and the commerce between our two countries. We were doing about $1 billion worth of trade with Germany, and it dropped down to as low as $150 million by 1934. And then as we move forward, the trade, you know, going both ways between the United States and Germany was diminishing because of Hitler's, you know, for one thing, Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass, when so many Jews were rounded up in the ghettos and taken, began to transition to the concentration camps, the United States cut off. They reduced trade. They got out of trade agreements. It was a deterioration over time of the relationship that we have with Germany. I didn't realize that there were people on the left who were out there saying that the United States created Adolf Hitler and that we, you know, we propped him up economically, and that's just not true. But for Biden to actually say that there was any relationship between Hitler, the fact that we did have some kind of relationship with Hitler prior to World War II, it was not a good one. To try to compare that to Kim Jong-un was just not a very good look. So that I think that was a gaffe for Biden that I think will hurt him. And Trump made some gaffes. Mm-hmm. I think that the American people saw President Trump as being mostly respectful. He was not, you know, interrupting Joe Biden every 2 seconds, which is a much better look for the president. You know, the moderator interrupted President Trump about 22, 24 times. I mean, they went through a bunch of interruptions, only interrupted Joe Biden a couple of times. That's to be expected. But because even Trump, I think, paid her a compliment about halfway through the debate. I remember thinking, wow.
Yeah, he said something halfway through.
So
positive.
So, you know, as far as this being a game changer, no. Is it going to sway some undecided voters? Maybe. I think it could sway some toward Trump, and I think it could sway some toward Biden. Biden said a lot of things that are just not true. Trump had some inaccuracies in some of his statements. Biden painted himself in a corner over Hunter Biden and getting money from China or any other country because he flatly denied that that had ever happened. He didn't address the emails, even though that came up. He didn't address them directly other than to say that Rudy Giuliani's a pawn of the Russians. And that's just not going to fly because Fox News has already demonstrated that this computer store in Delaware has a signed receipt from Hunter Biden and exactly what they were going to do for 3 laptops. The FBI, we know that the FBI has the laptops because Fox News was able to get the documents that prove that the FBI showed up with a subpoena and took those laptops. And so all of that is demonstrably false. If people are saying that all of that came from Russia, and unless you're saying that Hunter Biden is a Russian agent, then I don't see how you get that the laptops came from Russia. And now we've got Tony Bobulinski coming forward, and this guy yesterday in his interview, we're going to talk about it in a minute, but it was an explosive statements that he made. I mean, he was a business partner with Hunter Biden, And he's got text messages, three cell phones full of information that he's turning over to the FBI, and a boatload of records and documents to back up everything that he said. And by the way, when they come after him, it's going to be hard to smear this guy. He's former military, and he's also a lifelong Democrat supporter. This is not a Republican operative. You cannot in any way point to this guy and say, well, he's been given to the Republican Party all these years. No, he's given to Democrat causes. And he even said that he had been a Democrat supporter, but he couldn't let this stuff go by. So this is serious stuff. Whether the American people pay much attention to it or not, I don't know, but they should. Yesterday, in what could have been a genuine bombshell, I mean, people talk about bombshells all the time, and sometimes they're more like firecrackers. But yesterday, in what really could be considered a bombshell, Tony Bobulinski surfaced. And this guy, it's going to be hard for the progressives to turn him into some kind of Russian agent. He's a retired U.S. Navy lieutenant. He's been a supporter of Democrats. When he got out of the Navy, he eventually became the CEO of Cinehawk Holdings. And according to the statement that, what did you say? Are you correcting my?
Sinohawk, because of Sino was related to China, and okay. Hawk was a favorite animal by Hunter's brother.
All right, why don't you tell the story?
No, it's just Sinohawk.
You know, just
I'm here to help you.
Knowing that about the word hawk being in that name is a something about Biden. I have not. Where did you, the heck did you get that?
I stay up on things. I have secret information that you don't know about.
That's what I'm saying. You need to tell this story. Just let me get out of the way and you tell it.
Actually, Bobulinski said it in his thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I watched that interview, and I guess I slept through that part because I had no idea that Sinohawk. Is that correct?
That's it. Yes, sir.
Jeepers. All right. Anyway. This holdings company, whatever it is, and according to the statement that Bobulinski made to the New York Post, Sinohawk Holdings is a partnership involving Chinese energy company CEFC and the Biden family. After retiring from the military, Bobulinski said he held a high-level security clearance and served as an instructor for the Naval Nuclear Power Training Command. Now, this is all coming from the Daily Mail. Bobulinski also claimed not to be a political person, but said he had made campaign donations to Democrats. He alleged that code names that were used to disguise the identities of some of the individuals named in the emails, references to the big guy, were actually about Joe Biden. Jim Biden, Joe Biden's brother, was referred to as JB, which everybody, I mean, when these emails surfaced off of Hunter Biden's computer, I don't think anybody questioned who JB was. JB was Jim Biden. Jim Biden's been in the news before for some of the same kind of stuff. In one of the emails published in October by the New York Post, money was allegedly earmarked to be given to the big guy. Bobulinski said, I don't have a political axe to grind. I just saw behind the Biden curtain, and I grew concerned with what I saw. The Biden family aggressively leveraged the Biden family name to make millions of dollars from foreign entities, even though some were from communist-controlled China. Documents published by the New York Post were allegedly obtained from the hard drive of a laptop computer taken to a Delaware computer repair shop. Hunter Biden's ownership of the laptop has not been confirmed by the store owner, John Mac Isaac, who has impaired vision. Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, allegedly obtained a copy of the hard drive and gave it to the New York Post. On Thursday, Bobulinski told reporters that he was in possession of text messages, documentation, and electronic devices that would lend authenticity to his allegations. He was introduced to Joe Biden by Jim Biden and Hunter Biden in May of 2017. At my approximately hour-long meeting with Joe that night, Bobulinski said, we discussed the Biden's history, the Biden's family business plans with the Chinese, with which he was plainly familiar, at least at a high level. In a statement released Thursday, Biden's campaign said Joe Biden has never even considered being involved in business with his family, nor in any overseas business whatsoever. Now, that's a lie if this information that Bobulinski has checks out. and he's already demonstrated. I mean, he's got phones with text messages that pretty much verify everything that he's saying, that he said in this this statement or press conference, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it's really just a statement.
Right. He just went in and he said, here's my phones, here's my computers, here's all the information. You know, here's my search engine history. Here you go. Have at it.
Now, it's supposedly he's going to sit down with some senators today in sort of an informal setting. We don't know for sure. I don't know that Bob Alinsky has said that he's going to do this, that he would do it, but that's what the senators want to do. Supposedly he agreed to an informal meeting today, but that remains to be seen whether that meeting is going to come about. But if it does, then maybe we're going to get even some more information. Now, this is going to be impossible for the media to ignore. I mean, the mainstream media can ignore it, but last night in the debate, people who watched the debate are going to have questions. For example, if you got your average guy, gal that goes to work every day, comes home, and before they start dealing with the kids and supper, or maybe while they're getting supper ready, they turn on CBS News. Well, or ABC News or NBC News. Well, if they do that, they don't know a thing about any of this with Hunter Biden. Nothing. Because the major news outlets have blocked it out for political reasons. They're pretty much the Democrat communication arm. The mainstream media is the Democrat communication arm. So they wouldn't have any idea. But if they watched the debate last night, then this came out. President Trump went after Joe Biden about Bob Alinsky and basically got all of this information that Bob Alinsky brought forward onto the table. So it's going to cause people to ask questions. And I think it's going to cause people to not be willing to just accept the fact that there's a media blackout and a big tech blackout on this story.
I think, too, what it does is, you know, before yesterday and Bob Alinsky came out, there was a lot of people, every time you talked about Hunter Biden and what was going on, they just said, well, that solidifies that I'm not voting for Hunter Biden. You know, I mean, it was just this, I don't care. It's Hunter. It's not his dad.
Right.
Of course, you and I would sit here and we understood that there was more at play and what was really going on. And then with Bob Alinsky coming out and all of this information, these emails and such, in such a way, clearly tying Joe into what was going on with Hunter, those people are going to have to kind of face the music and realize, okay, yeah, maybe Joe, he's got a lot more to do with this than I want to acknowledge.
Yeah. Well, and one of the text messages, it was actually, they were texting back and forth that Joe Biden wanted his name kept out of it. And, you know, because obviously it would be politically sensitive or some such thing. I don't have it in front of me, but it was definitely indicating that Joe Biden was trying hard to keep from being connected to these business dealings, although he was connected. When you have an hour long meeting with someone whose responsibility it is to pursue investments and business deals with the Chinese, and that Hunter Biden is kind of the point person for all that, and Joe Biden's in the room for an hour, and Joe Biden wants to deny that he's ever taken money or ever had any dealings with foreign companies through his son. I mean, I just don't see how that story stands the smell test at all once all this information from Bob Alinsky becomes more widely known. So is this going to make a difference? I don't know. I don't know how many Americans care about it. Should they care about it? Yeah, I think they should. You've got a vice president of the United States using his influence, his name, to line his own pockets. We don't know how much money, but we know that I think there was 10% of what was going to be gleaned out of this business deal that was being set up with the Chinese that was going to go to the big guy. And Bob Alinsky said in no uncertain terms that that's Joe Biden. There's no question about that anymore. Now, these are facts. Now, they're facts that can be challenged because any fact can be challenged, but you have to have evidence. There's zero evidence that the Russians have anything to do with this. You've got Hunter Biden's computers dropped off at a store in Delaware. You've got a receipt proving they belong to him. You've got information that shows that the FBI took possession of them. The FBI has had possession of them since December of 2019. So where is the what Russian connection? The only thing you can do is go to Rudy Giuliani and say, well, Giuliani met with these Russians back a few years ago, and it turns out that some of those oligarchs that Giuliani met with maybe were involved in some type of Russian intelligence work. Giuliani didn't have any idea about that at the time, but the only thing Giuliani's done here is take the copies of the hard drives from those computers and turn them over to the New York Post, because the owner of the computer store gave them the copies to Giuliani. He gave the hard drives to the FBI, the copies to Giuliani. So tying all this stuff to some kind of Russian plot is going to be really hard, if you ask me. I just, because there's no evidence. Now, you can say it. You can get out there. And that's basically that's what progressives, they just spout stuff with no backup.
They just say something long enough that they hope that if they can say it long enough and loud enough, you'll eventually just believe it without any kind of evidence. And that's right. The majority of what we've seen in the media and from the left in the last 3.5 to 4 years.
Well, and that's just like saying Trump's responsible for everybody that's died from
Trump's
the coronavirus.
You say it long enough and loud enough, people actually believe it.
People are going to believe it. I've never believed Trump is a racist, and it's absolutely absurd to make the statement that Trump killed over 200 and whatever thousand. And that's a big Democrat talking point, because they believe that they can ram that home with people. They can tie the coronavirus to Trump, blame him. And I think President Trump did well last night demonstrating that, you know, even at the beginning, as Trump was taking action, Joe Biden was attacking the president for the action that he took. And now Biden's coming along and trying to say that Trump did nothing. Well, he must have done something to get Biden all worked up into a lather to the point that he was willing to call the president a xenophobe. And that's absolutely demonstrably true, because he put it out in a tweet. It's Russian sources that Gary has that are giving him all this information on Charathon and word pronunciation, and I mean it's just incredible. All right, we're gonna take a little break here, because I mean it is Friday and we should have some fun on Friday. So you may have noticed that Hannah's wearing basketball hoops as earrings today. She just went down to the gym at her church and just took them right down off the wall, flattened them out, and she's got them hanging from her ears. So I'm going to try to get this piece of paper through her right earring.
If I'm
successful, she's going to have to go get the yogurt and bring it in here. And if I miss, I'll have to go get the yogurt and bring it in here, because we have Chick-fil-A yogurt here as part of our Share-a-thon benefits going on this week. Okay, here we go. You got to turn to the side a little bit there.
I'll even hold it.
Okay, I got to get the yogurt.
Denied.
I didn't. I don't think I squashed it up enough.
Not quite enough. Well, this is an oval teardrop shape.
Yeah.
So it's not a
complete circle.
Complete hoop.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's what happens when you flatten out a basketball goal. I mean, that's just kind of exactly what I think it would
be. I love
like.
These earrings. You cannot.
No, that's okay.
As you say, whatever you want, I'm going to keep wearing them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I'm.
They're purple and they're beautiful.
They're purple. They're beautiful. You can swing on them if you've got. I mean, they're just. You want to grab them. You just want to grab them and just. Yeah.
The amazing thing is that these are so big, and yet they still don't touch my shoulders because my neck is just so long. That's the thing.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but
it's true. It's true.
Well,
it's a giraffe neck.
I mean, but it kind of calls attention to your neck.
I know.
And kind of, but it's a nice. It's very nice.
Ah, thanks. I have a nice neck.
I have no worries, no problems. Moving right along. This is where we need the debate moderator to come in and say the next question.
Next question.
We have more questions to get to, so hurry up.
Yep.
I'm working on it, Mr. Russian. So here's something that I'm concerned about that's going to happen in the next, what's today, Friday? The next 24 to 48 hours. This interview with Leslie Stahl, whereas I think some good capital was built up between the president and some undecided voters in this debate. It's true there's not another debate, but there are these interviews by Leslie Stahl that are going to be released. It's the 60-minute interviews. Mm-hmm. They're going to come out Sunday night. Now, President Trump is already, what he's trying to do is to blow up this bomb before it goes off without any intention paid to. In other words, he knows that this bomb's going to go off when this interview airs, and he walks out. He gets mad. He gets frustrated. And there's no question. The question as to whether or not the media is hostile toward President Trump was answered a long time ago. I mean, the media hate this man. They're as committed to his destruction and the end of his presidency as the progressives in the Democrat Party. So, you know, if the president was going to do this interview, he needed to get his mind right. I mean, I have to do that all the time. Like, if I'm going to sit down with somebody that I know I'm going to have sharp disagreements with, I try to prepare for that by getting my mind right. I tell myself, I have little conversations with myself about, you know, you're not going to respond. You're not going to let their comments control your emotional response. You're going to stay focused. You're going to stay on topic and just bore straight ahead. I've seen people do this. I see Ted Cruz do it. Ted Cruz comes under attack every time he talks to a media personality, but he stays focused on what he's trying to get across, and that helps him to keep from just losing his mind. The president can't help. He just loses his mind when somebody like Leslie Stahl treats him in a hostile fashion after putting on the soft teddy bear gloves for Joe Biden. I mean, it's going to be clear, but I just think this is a bad look for the president. After we've gotten this debate that was rational, it was coherent, the president made some good points, I think it was a plus for President Trump. And now the closing thing after the debate, I wonder if this is what people are going to remember, is this interview with Leslie Stahl, where he's having to come out and release part of the interview ahead of time to kind of defuse this bomb that's about ready to go off Sunday night.
I don't know if there's anybody who... I don't know. I just don't think it really moves the needle much. All the people that already hate Donald Trump, all of this stuff, you know, that 60-minute interview, like, they're not going to sit down and watch it and be like, oh, this brings new light to the table. I mean, they're just... It's more of what they already believe.
It's the undecided vote. And according to some, there's still 6 to 8% of the population out there that's undecided. Now, that's, look, in the world that we live in, that's just absolutely insane. I mean, to think that you've got somebody that hadn't decided. But we got to keep remembering that a lot of people pay no attention to politics. I mean, you know, every time there's these man in the street interviews where somebody grabs a microphone and goes out and starts talking to people, just random. How many people can't even name the Secretary of State? How many people can't tell you who the Vice President is? How many people, some can't even tell you who the President is? So to assume that everybody is as dialed in, plugged in, as say we are in this room or people that we know, is a misnomer. Some people, there's a certain percentage that are going to vote, and Trump needs those people. When you're behind in a lot of the polls, and I know I've told you, please don't yell. We've looked at all the polling data, and we've talked about why it's likely inaccurate and why the Trafalgar Group poll is probably hyperactive, accurate, and it shows a much better light on President Trump. I get that, but still, I think you would, the momentum. Particularly since the last debate. Now, that may shift after this debate. I actually expect to see the polls begin to tighten even more if this Leslie Stahl thing doesn't derail it. And I don't know how many people watch 60 Minutes.
I was going to ask is what's the, you know, what's going to be the comparison between those who would have watched the debate last night versus those who watch 60 Minutes?
Well, I can tell you this, a lot more are going to watch it than would have if the president hadn't made a big deal about it.
Well, I don't know, because I thought it was kind of fascinating yesterday, too, because I watched some of it that he released. I thought it was kind of fascinating to see the behind the scenes and to see what was going on. So that kind of intrigued me just alone. And so then to see the interactions that happened behind the scenes between him and the reporter, that was also intriguing.
Yeah, but you watched it. I mean, you know, you sat down, took time to watch. Most people are, let's go back to the headline readers and the soundbite listeners. All they know is that Trump blew up in an interview with Leslie Stahl, and we're going to get to see it Sunday night. I mean, Sunday night is 60 Minutes. And I guarantee you this, that more people will watch Sunday night than would have. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are going to be, but whatever they are, they're going to be more because this has been a headline. Normally, you know, you have an announcement by the network, you know, that they're going to put out, this is our 60 Minutes program. You see the promos, and that's it. But now you've got every.
But why would you wait till Sunday night to watch it when you can go ahead and watch it?
Because people don't. That, again, I'm talking about undecided voters. There's not any undecided voters that are news junkies. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a news junkie, news junkies and undecided voters don't go together because they're people who know what's going on and have been reading the tea leaf. They've already decided. They decided a long time ago. 50 million people have voted. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even. The other day, I think it was 2 days ago, it was up to 38 million. And I thought that was unbelievable. And yet now we're almost at 50 million. We're not at 50 million yet, but probably we're going to be at 50 million by the end of the day today. People will have voted already. I was talking to Drew McKissick yesterday. In fact, it might be a good if I could get him on the phone, maybe Monday. But anyway, Drew is the chairman of the South Carolina Republican Party. 680,000 people in South Carolina have already voted, and it's rising every day. I mean, we've talked about the lines, and it's going to be, they're projecting about 2.5 to over 2 million people to vote in a state that only has a population of about 4 million. Look up the population in South Carolina, would you?
It's 5 million.
Is it five million?
It's 5 million.
Okay. So yeah. So he said 2.5 million. So we're going to be up to 50%. And of course, at 2.5 million, that's not the people that are eligible to vote. Is a subset of that total population. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be. I don't know what the percentages are going to be, but they're going to be off the chart. I asked him. I said, "Is this the largest?" And he said, yes, this is going to dwarf turnout from any other election that we've ever seen. And I don't know, who does that help? When I was standing in line the other day, you talk about anecdotal evidence. When I was standing in line the other day, it was a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could look up and down the line, and in my head, I'm going, Trump voter, Biden, Biden, Harris, Biden, Trump. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just.
Yeah, sure.
And I could be wrong
because
I didn't. Yes, that's right. I'm stereotyping and judging. That's exactly what I did. But I'm just telling you, you know, it looked like a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that that's kind of what we're going to have. We talked about another thing we talked about yesterday I thought was interesting. The Republican Party has the strongest ground game that they've ever had in South Carolina. They're knocking on about 10,000 doors a day.
That's incredible.
Statewide. Mm-hmm. Just think about that. They are blanketing the state with people that are having face-to-face personal contact. And see, the Republican Party nationwide is doing the same thing.
I was going to say, I really hope that that's happening in states like Pennsylvania.
It is.
I mean.
Oh, yeah. Look, they've got their ground game for the National Republican Party is off the chart. And one of the things that the Democrat National Committee and others have complained to the Biden campaign is they don't have a ground game.
Not only are we
non-existent.
So far outpacing what we've done before, the Democrats are way under where they've been before. So
Campaign is depending on digital, online, and television advertising. I mean, and whatever, you know, the 200 people that show up to a Biden rally that thought they were wrong, if they were supposed to be at the Trump rally and they took a wrong turn. Okay, how about these numbers? I got some for you on Jamie Harrison in South Carolina. I thought you might find this interesting. And these are facts, by the way. And I have my secret sources, too. So I can't tell you exactly where I got this information, but I'm telling you, it's from a source that knows. 56 million of the record-setting 58 million, or 94.39%, that Jamie Harrison raised in the third quarter now that would have been July 1st to September 30th, came from donors outside of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So you got $58 million. And I mean, that's an incredible number for a Senate race. I mean, that sounds like a presidential race. Mm-hmm. And all but 2 million of it came from outside South Carolina. In September alone, the percentage of out-of-state money given online ballooned to 97.23%. 25% of all of Harrison's Q3 money was from California. New York, California, and the greater D.C. area accounted for a whopping 46% of the money. Harrison averaged about $400,000 a day in fundraising between July 1st and September 18th. After Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death on September 18th, Harrison's online fundraising spiked to $2.3 million per day through September 30th, the last day of the reporting period. Now, how did this happen? Well, these out-of-state donors know, and they knew this, that Lindsey Graham and the Judiciary Committee, that Graham would be the man who would shepherd Amy Coney Barrett's nomination through the Senate. They also knew and were reminded that Graham is largely responsible for Kavanaugh being on the Supreme Court because of his defense of Kavanaugh. They're still furious over that. And so that's essentially why all this money's coming in from all around the country. If they could, the third reason I would say is because Senator Graham has become a close ally of President Trump. And so this would be a feather in their cap. And of course, Democrats want to control the Senate and they believe that Lindsey Graham is vulnerable. And so I just want to encourage again, everybody, that your vote is extremely important. If you need to get out there and vote your values, and you need to do it now. Kip's on the phone, wants to talk about early votes. Yes, sir. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the show. Happy Back Patent Friday.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Let me comment on this Jamie stuff. It's all Jamie all the time. He must have enough money to have his own channel. He is on constantly.
Yep.
Way outnumbering the Lindsey Graham commercials.
But, right.
But on as far as early voting, I want to know, on November the 3rd, did we just get this giant 50 million ballot count number getting dumped out on us by state all of a sudden, or does it trickle in all night long as they're opening envelopes or whatever they have to do?
Well, I don't know how it's going to work. It works differently state by state, as far as how the votes are counted. In South Carolina, because a lot of people are absentee voting, we don't have mass mailings of ballots being mailed out to people. So in South Carolina, you actually have a paper ballot that's being scanned. So the results will be immediately available. I mean, as the counts begin, we'll be able to know in South Carolina the results pretty quickly. Now, in states like...
Well, they won't open those envelopes until November the 3rd.
Well, there's not going to be... No, they won't. And I mean, in South Carolina, there's not going to be that many envelopes to open. Because, yeah, you can mail your absentee ballot in, and those ballots are being mailed in. That's something else we can ask Drew McKissick. We get him on the show. How many ballots are actually being mailed in? There are a number, but most of the lines are for the early voting. I mean, people are going in person to either absentee or early vote, and evidently there's a difference between those two things. Because early voting ends Saturday, absentee voting will continue all the way up until November 2nd. So is it going to, if the question
Saturday,
is, yeah, go ahead.
Saturday is the deadline. Saturday is our deadline.
For early voting. Early voting is different, evidently, from absentee voting. You can absentee vote up to November 2nd in person. I mean, you can go down to, you can keep going to the courthouse in Spartanburg down in the bottom there and absentee vote up to the 2nd, but you can't early vote. Early voting was taking place across from the Spartanburg courthouse, county offices, rather, at the Memorial Auditorium. So there's a difference between those two things, and I still don't quite understand why it's set up that way, but that's the way it is. The problem is going to be in Pennsylvania primarily because the actually ballots could be received up until the 12th, 11th, or 12th. If your ballot was postmarked before the 3rd, it can get there up to the 11th in Pennsylvania, I believe, is what they said. It's incredible.